American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Monday, June 9th, 2008. And you are listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global sit-rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow up on all of these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal. And you could get to my live journal, since Texas isn't exploding anymore, by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, and Radio Red Mercury. Soon to be on Radio Red Venus and Radio Planet Pluto. That's right, it's a planet. I don't care what any of you bastards say. As well, speaking of other worlds, good segue. Second Life, In the Node, Archers, like the guy with the bow or the mecha with a lot of missiles. Grid coordinates, 137-102-9999. And as well, in the fastest growing new community in the post-apocalyptic state, it's the New Wasteland at 3403-1941 North, 117-3729-5.50 West, where everybody's welcome because nobody has a home. Hey, let's get in some feedback right off the top. Hey, Sean! I think there should be an open-ended donation button on the Dark Atlas donate page. There's probably some people wanting to donate, but do not want to donate every month. So this also opens the possibility of some rich dude donating a few million. Anyway, adding an open-ended donation button would be awesome. Yeah, that would be awesome. The funny thing is that I have this... This brings us back to money. Money and donations. And I don't... You know, I even have a hard time selling my book because I know there's, like, problems with the book and everything. You know, they say Pablo Picasso used to sneak his little paint set into the museums and used to try to correct his own paintings while they were hanging on the wall. And he would get thrown out of the museums because he's like, no, but I'm the painter. I have to fix this. Sort of the same idea. Mind you, you don't have to look too hard in those books in order to find things to fix, but you see my point. So it's interesting when you talk about the donations and the point of adding an open-ended button. My ego is not so incredibly vast that I would think that I would, you know, be able to use an open-ended donation button. But then I started thinking, what if some dude showed up? What if some millionaire showed up and gave me a few million dollars? Really, would I continue to do the show even? You know, I mean, these are questions. It's a fair question. You know, I think I would, because I've been doing the show not making any money. So that means I don't have to, you see what I mean, though, right? Like, if I'm not doing the show to make money, I'm not relying on this chief source of my income. I do it because I enjoy the show, I enjoy the community, I enjoy the news stories, and, you know, probably a big part of my ego gets off on people listening to me. You know, maybe. Hey, who's all for affirmation? But you see my point. So I was thinking, you know, if I had a bunch of money, you know, what really would I do with it? And this is a great question. Everybody should ask that for themselves, you know, like, if I was totally loaded, how would I spend my time? Sure, yeah, okay, you'd crash a bunch of sports cars and trip around the planet a few times until you understand the statement that travel really is a foretaste of hell, until you come to the conclusion that you're going to settle down somewhere. Maybe you'll be at some shop, maybe you'll be, you know, some Thailand jungle place, or maybe you'll set up shop on some island somewhere of Dr. Moreau, or whatever you want to do, but eventually you're going to settle down somewhere. So you want to ask yourself, what are you going to do with your time? What would you do with your time? And that's a good way to ask a question, because at the end of it, you know, you'd be like, well, I'd build robots. Well, why don't you just build robots now, become very proficient at it, and then you will, you know, eventually make money. This is the idea. This is why, you know, I took to writing and I do the things that I want to do. It's because, you know, eventually, hey, maybe someday they'll make money. But if I had that kind of money floating around, what would I do? I think I would be a professional adventurer, I think is what I do. Honest to God. I think I'd be one of these cats who just goes around the planet looking for treasure and dragging Sumerian and my wife and the whole Wog posse along with me, filming every step of the way. Sort of like a deranged Michael Palin, if that's, or Palin, or however you say his name, but if that's even possible. I mean, comparing yourself to somebody like that and, you know, saying you're deranged. Well, mind you, he's a heavily educated guy. All those guys got degrees from Oxford, the entire Python crew. But you see my point. But yes, anyway, bit of a tangent there. Let's get back to the story. Dear Sean, in response to your question on swearing, oh, you knew this was coming. Nice. I think you should swear your head off. Newsreel isn't some sanctioned primetime TV show for the sheep. It's your show. You don't have to follow anyone's rules but your own. There's also no FCC guidelines for the internet yet, and at least for now, the WOGs can openly communicate. Unfortunately, with podcasting and IPTV moving into the public consciousness, there will eventually be a call to regulate what people can say online. We're already hearing about people being arrested in the third world for what they say online, and you can bet that their employers are watching their employees' MySpace and Facebooks. I don't want to see the internet change from the free and open exchange of ideas of regulated transmission to the... Pardon me. I'll say that again. I don't want to see the internet change from the free and open exchange of ideas to the regulated transmission of certain ideas like TV did. Just until that happens, swear on, my friend. And that's from JR. So that's one good point. You know, hey, you got the opportunity. You should be able to, you know, swear your brains out. And we got another one coming in here. Dear Sean Kennedy, for quite some time, I was playing Newsreel through my mobile kit. I used battery-powered speakers and had a shoulder mount configuration with a stack of burns in front of me while sitting in public. The only problem I had, the only real dirty looks I really got happened when someone walked by to hear, happened to hear fuck loudly proclaimed. As a field agent, I found the cursing to be an impediment to the mission. Not that I'm saying to stop, it's just a fact that it does wind up impeding the mission, quote-unquote, the mission. Well, agent, you know, I mean, he's got a point. He's doing what he thinks is the mission, right? Which is distribution. I don't want to be, I don't want to be as guilty as the dudes who are, you know, out there spray painting the world. You know, I don't want you guys to, you know, go out and just indiscriminately spam people. You know, I was thinking word of mouth is okay. But he does have a point there. I mean, if you're thinking that your local pastor who's into robots would dig the show or whatever, you know, maybe you might try to hook him up with it, but lo and behold, there's a problem. So, you know, it's because of the swearing, naturally. So, I don't know. It's something to think about. Something to think about. Dear Sean Kennedy, you mentioned in your 519 show about people not setting up city Wi-Fi here in the States. It's not a question of laziness. It's a question of legality. Verizon has full rights in the U.S. cities to put up citywide Wi-Fi. The city governments themselves aren't even allowed to put up citywide systems unless Verizon doesn't do so after a certain period of time upon the request of the city. Philadelphia is the only large city I know that has tried it, but eventually failed due to lack of interest from the public. Interesting! And that was sent in from Wyandi. Good to know people out there are actually paying attention to what's going on. Nicely done. Good for you. I wonder if I'm getting, like, a lot of static feedback from the show. I'm looking at my mic levels, and I'm getting some funky levels here. Is everything cool? Still got some sound. I'm going to just see what my sound levels are like. Just one second. And that's what makes pirate radio awesome, is the fact that we can pause in time and space. And if you were sitting inside of the second node archers inside the second light sim, you would be able to see the show recorded there. See, that's what we do. We actually record the show inside of Second Life, and then which doesn't really have time and space, so we're kind of recording the show in another dimension, and we're doing it on a Thursday, that specific time. I usually try to do the shows on Thursdays. That's not to say that the shows happen on Thursdays. Sometimes the shows happen on Monday morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know what I mean? So it's one of those kind of days where the show, as long as it's up there on the grid by a certain time, that's all that matters, and I get to keep my job. So, you know, just saying, if anyone wants to know when that's usually happening, I'm not saying I'll show up then. It's just that there's a better than average chance. That's where the fish tend to gather. In the news, let's get into the news. No, sort yourselves out. Sort yourselves out is the, the advice. I suppose it was Dear Sean, you know, like a Dear Abby thing, only it's the Dear Sean thing. It's a good idea. It's a fun thing. I like it a lot. I think that it's interesting when people send in their advice. Sometimes the advice is a little bit freaky. Sometimes I get people asking me some crazy questions. Over the years, I've had some crazy-ass questions. like transgender questions and stuff like that, which I, you know, I'm not really so good with those kind of questions anyway, so I don't know why anyone would ask me that stuff, but I don't know, man. Some stuff, I don't think anybody can really make a judgment call on, you know, who knows, right? But anyway, into the news. Now, I'm going to try to not be really bad here, okay? I'm going to try to not be negative to you, but today's news stories, you know, seriously, like, you're going to go 2-3 stories here, and it's going to be gun store. I'm here to tell you. Okay, these are some freaking brutal news stories. So, it's not often I give a disclaimer at the beginning of the show, but, dude, I'm here to tell you, these news stories will just kill you. Okay, let's start. TNA news, with virtually no fanfare. Now, remember a while back I was talking about Ron Paul, and he was against a bill about genetics? And I was like, why would Ron Paul do that? That doesn't sound smart. Well, here's why. With virtually no fanfare, President Bush signed into law a plan, according to the government, to take no more than 6 months to set up a national contingency plan to screen newborns' DNA in case of a public health emergency. So all newborns get screened. The new law requires that the results of the program, including information, research, and data on newborn screening, shall be assembled by a central clearinghouse and then made available on the Internet. According to congressional records, S-1858, sponsored by Senator Chris Dodd, was approved in the Senate December 13th, and the House April 8th, and signed by Bush April 24th. Soon under this bill, the DNA of all citizens will be housed in a government genomic biobanks and considered governmental property for government research, said Twila Brace, president of the Citizens Council on Healthcare. The DNA taken at birth from every citizen is essentially owned by the government, and every citizen becomes a potential subject of a government-sponsored genetic research. Like, holy crap. Brass has objected extensively to plans in Minnesota to provide the state government the same option now handed to the federal government by Congress. The bill, she said, strips citizens of genetic privacy rights and DNA property rights. Your DNA property rights. The bill also violates research ethics and the Nuremberg Code. You know that code we set up after the Nazis were like experimenting on people? The public is clueless. S-1858 imposes a federal agenda of DNA data banking and population-wide genetic research, Brace continued. It does not require consent, and there are no requirements to fully inform parents about the warehouse of their child's DNA for the purpose of genetic research. So they don't have to tell you that they're doing this. This is a law. It has already been signed into law. There is no, guesswork here. There's no petitions to sign. It's already been done. Already, in Minnesota, the state health department reports that 42,210 children of the 780,000 whose DNA is housed in the Minnesota DNA warehouses have been subjected to genetic research without their parents' knowledge or consent. Already happening. They're already doing that. Nothing new there. The federal plans to set up a coast-to-coast DNA collections, then report the result to physicians and families, as well as educate families about newborn screening. We are considered guinea pigs as opposed to human beings with rights, Brace, warning such DNA databases could spark the next wave of demand for eugenics, the concept of improving the human race through control of various inherited traits. Margaret Sanger, founder of Planned Parenthood, advocated eugenics to cull from the population types of people she considered unfit. In 1921, Sanger said eugenics is the most adequate and thorough avenue to the solution of racial, political, and social problems. And she later lamented that the ever-increasing, unceasingly spawning class of human beings who should never have been born at all. Such DNA collection programs are offered as a screening requirement to detect treatable illness. Currently, types of tests conducted in various state-to-state, but Health Resources and Service Administration has reported that a child would include a recommendation. Oh, pardon me. Has reported the report would include a recommendation for a uniform panel of conditions. Fortunately, Dodd said, when his plan was launched, some newborn screening occurs in every state. This legislation will provide researchers for states to expand their newborn screening programs. So what's the big deal about looking into DNA to hunt for various disease possibilities? Nothing, said Brace. If that's where the hunt would end, which is what we were told in the last news stories that came out. However, she said researchers are already looking into genes related to violence, crime, and different behaviors, just like they're doing in England. Just like they're doing in China. Just like they're doing all over the world. This isn't just about diabetes, asthma, and cancer, she said. It's also about behavioral issues. The last generation of rebels can be found here inside of Archers. In England, they decided they should have doctors looking for problem children, and those children should be reported, their DNA taken in case they would become criminals, she said. In fact, published reports in the UK note that senior police forensics experts believe genetic samples should be studied because it may be possible to identify potential criminals as young as the age of 5. 5. You are a criminal, branded, genetically predisposed to criminality. Sorry about your luck. You get a chip in your brain. Wait for it. Wait for it. Brass said efforts to study traits and gene factors and classify people would just be the beginning. What could happen through subsequent programs is to address such conditions, she wondered. Not all research is great, she said. Classifying people could lead to discrimination and prejudice, which is the very act of classifying people. People can look at your data and make assessments, ultimately, about who you are. We're going to take blood. That's your resume. Go see the film Gattaca again. This, it goes on, you know, and the only guy to speak out against this was U.S. Representative Ron Paul from Texas. Was one of the few voices to warn of the dangers. Before the plan's approval, he said, I cannot support legislation, no matter how much I sympathize with the legislation's stated goals, that exceeds the constitutional limitations on federal power or in any way threatens the liberty of the American people. Wow. He goes on to say, this is continuing to quote him, since S-1858 violates the Constitution and may have unintended consequences that will weaken the American healthcare system and further erode medical privacy, I must oppose it. Very interesting guy. Paul said, S-1858 gives the federal bureaucracy the authority to develop a model newborn screening program. Madam Speaker, the federal government lacks both the constitutional authority and the competence to develop a newborn screening program adequate for a nation as large and diverse as the United States. Wow. Ron Paul, taking it to the Senate. It's a shame that election's bought and paid for. I guess Hillary's out, hey? Yeah, that's what they're saying now. Hillary's out of the race. I still think she's going to win. Isn't that funny? Because, I don't know, I just got this feeling that at the end of the day, at some point within the next year or so, someone's going to be calling Hillary Clinton Mrs. President. Do you know what I mean? I just a weird feeling I got. Call me crazy. Crazy guy. I don't know why that would happen. What possibly could happen that would make that happen? Well, if she became the vice president and then something happened to the president, that would happen. Maybe if there was a big upset. Maybe if Diebold was bought and paid for in a massive landslide and she actually gets the nomination, or if they can, you know, put a scandal on. We got a lot of time before the elections. She's the only one who went to the Bilderberg meeting, so I'm thinking that largely, you know, she's going to be the next choice because there is no choice. It's just an illusion. And all this is a roller coaster's ride to. That's how cynical I am. Isn't that brutal? I'm so cynical that I believe that this entire election's a sham. And this is all done as kind of a way to break the public spirit. If anything, you know, they might come up with another tragedy that they could use to whip up hatred against people, you know. Anyway, in crackdown state news, you ready for this one? Speaking of Washington, D.C. you're not going to believe this, okay? D.C. police will seal off entire neighborhoods, set up checkpoints, and kick out strangers under a new program that D.C. officials hope will help them rescue the city from its out-of-control violence. Under an executive order expected to be announced today, Police Chief Kathy Lehner will have the authority to designate, check it out, neighborhood safety zones. At least 6 officers will man cordons around these zones and demand identification from people coming in and out of them. Anyone who doesn't live there, work there, or have a legitimate reason to be there will be sent away or face arrest. Documents obtained by the Examiner show. Lehner has been struggling to reverse D.C.'s spiraling crime rate, but has been forced by public outcry to scale back several initiatives, including her all-hands-on-deck weekend planned for warrantless door-to-door searches for drugs and guns. Under today's proposal, the no-go zones will last up to 10 days, according to internal police documents. Frontline officers are already being signed up for training on running blue curtains, Peter Nichols, the city's interim attorney general, said the quarantine would have a narrow focus. This is a very targeted program that has been used in other cities, like Moscow. Nichols told the Examiner, I'm not worried about the constitutionality of it. Clearly not, sure, not worried about the constitutionality, because you're crazy. Others are Christopher Brahman, chairman of D.C. Police Union, and former lawyer, calling the checkpoint proposal breathtaking. Yeah. Shelley Broderick, president of D.C. Area America's Civil Liberty Union and the dean of the University of District of Columbia's law school, said the plan was, quote-unquote, cockamamie. I think they tried this in Russia and failed, she said. It's just our experience in the city that we always wind up targeting poor people and people of color. We treat the kids coming home from choir practice same as we treat those kids who are selling drugs. Selling drugs! The proposal has provisional support of D.C. Councilman Harry Tommy Thomas, D Ward 5, whose ward has become a war zone. Yeah. They're really going to crack down on what we believe to be a systematic problem with the open-air drug markets, Thomas told the Examiner. Thomas said, though, that he worried that D.C. was moving towards a police state. You gotta love that. You know, when you're moving towards a police state and people are actually, you know, coming out and saying in Washington that, yeah, you know, D.C.'s moving towards a police state. Kind of frightening. Kind of frightening, you know? Now, talking about people who lie to you, who you really don't want to have lie to you. NASA. You don't want to have let NASA lie to you. In Burning Planet News, on September 29, 2006, 14 United States senators consigned a letter to NASA, or pardon me, to the NASA Inspector General, to request a formal investigation into allegations of political interference in the works of scientists at NASA. In particular, the letter conveyed the senators' concern with the apparent repeat instances of scientists having publications of their research and access to the media blocked solely based upon their views and conclusions regarding the reality impacts of global warming. The letter also identified areas of specific concern, coupled with a request for this office to conduct a full and thorough investigation of its suppression of science and censorship of the scientists at NASA. Accordingly, the NASA Office Inspector General conducted an administrative investigation to examine the reports of alleged political interference, predominantly by the senior NASA Headquarters Office of Public Affairs officials, with the work of NASA scientists pertaining to climate change, to include whether NASA inappropriately prevented one of its scientists, Dr. James E. Hansen, from speaking to the media in December of 2005. Our investigation found that during the fall of 2004 through early 2006, the NASA Headquarters Office of Public Affairs managed the topic of climate change in a manner that reduced, marginalized, or mischaracterized climate change science made available to the general public through those particular media over which the Office of Public Affairs had control, i.e. news releases and media access. We also conclude that the climate change editorial decisions were localized within NASA Headquarters Office of Public Affairs. We found no credible evidence suggesting that senior NASA or administration officials directed the NASA Headquarters Office of Public Affairs to minimize information related to climate change. So it's all them. Hang them. They weren't following anybody's orders. They just made it up on their own to change the climate change data. To the contrary, we found that once NASA leadership within the office of the administrator were made aware of the scope of the conflict between the Office of Public Affairs and the scientists working on the climate change, they aggressively implemented new policies with a view towards improved processes in the editorial making decisions related to the scientific public affairs matters. So bottom line, they altered the reports so that climate change didn't look like it was happening. We knew about global warming. But, of course, why would they tell anyone about it? Why would they tell anyone about it? They don't want to change anything. Things are working to their advantage, right? If there's a massive cataclysm that's going on, we're going to kill off a lot of people, and that's sort of, you know, a big plan of a lot of these governments. I think there's too many people around anyway. Too many of the wrong kind of people, clearly. You know, that's what this eugenics thing is all about. But there's still those other pesky rat-like people. You know, the ones who just the wogs out there who just kind of, you know, they understand. Yeah, okay, I'm not a crackhead. No, I'm not crazy. you know, I got my job and I'm living my life. You know, I'm staying clean. I'm doing what I got to do. I mean, I'm going to be around for a long time, right? Well, no, because, see, what's going to happen is that protesters are going to become more and more vilified while all the time they're encouraging media to get people to go protest. They'll glorify them in the media, and then they'll vilify them in the news. So they kind of make these hero-type figures out of protesters. And what protesters then do is they go line up in these cages, and they rally, and we get a whole bunch of really good video footage that the news can run to make you look stupid, and then they roll out the robots to kick your ass, because that way there's no police and you don't run into any of the, you know, post-traumatic stress. Now, you're thinking, Sean, are you talking about people farming people so that we can be farmed by robots? Yeah, in Terminator news! Here's the set. The U.S. military's small but growing arsenal of armed robots has a new addition. Bot maker Forrest Miller has shipped the first of its new killer machines to the Defense Department's Combating Terrorism Technology Support Office. Okay? The 350-pound MARS, Modular Advanced Armed Robotic System, machine can carry a 40mm grenade launcher or an M240B medium machine gun. Or, if the robot operators want their killer bot to be a little less lethal, the thing can be equipped with a laser dazzler, a loudspeaker, or pepper spray. After years of safety testing and modifications, three MARS killbot predecessors were sent to Iraq in 2007. But after nearly 9 months in the field, safety concerns, among other reasons, have kept those machines from firing a shot in combat. So the MARS makers keep emphasizing how safe their lethal machine is. Software controls allow the robot's drivers to select fire zones and no-fire zones. A mechanical range of fans keep the MARS gun pointed away from friendly positions. MARS was developed with the same number as... with safety as the number one goal, and will continue to be tested exhaustively under various conditions in the coming months to ensure full compliance with the standards of safety releases for fielding. The company says in a statement, which goes on to reinforce that the robot is human-operated. Yeah, but they're putting riot control gear on robots. Okay? They just shipped out. They're putting non-lethal stuff on there. You notice they didn't say the big T word, right? They didn't say the taser word. Well, we got more Terminator news. Don't feel bad. In December, after all the lawsuits and the private eyes and the backroom kneels, iRobot, the guys who make the vacuum cleaner, okay, iRobot came out and they said that iRobot finally wrestled away the biggest ground robotics contract in military history from its former employee and his secret partner. This unmanned surge was worth up to $286 million and 3,000 machines. And it didn't look like it would be topped anytime soon. But appearances can be deceiving. In a world of military robots, I mean, okay, we're talking about big money now. Okay, we're talking about big money now. All right? Turns out there's been a second unmanned surge, and yesterday's iRobot rival, Forrest Miller, announced that it had won the contract to supply it. The 5-year deal is worth $400 million, and it will cover tens of thousands of Talon bomb handling robots and spare parts, maybe between 2,000 and 4,000 robots. That would more than double the 2,000 Talons already in the field finding and getting rid of improvised explosives if all the robots actually ordered under this indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract, that is. Once the absolute darling of the military bomb squads, the rugged, easy-to-drive Talon now has a more serious competitor in a robot upgrade, Packbot. With the number of bombs dropping all over Iraq and Afghanistan, with the beefed-up rival, is there really room to double the number of Talon machines? Well, would you think so? I don't know. So the Army's buying 6,000 of these things, right? But now we got still more Terminator news. What do you do with a robot armed with a 1,000,000 round per minute gun? Crowd control. For several months, Metal Storm, the troubled electric gun developer, has been working with iRobot, the makers of military machines and cute semi-autonomous vacuum cleaners, to arm some of their new 250-pound unmanned ground vehicles. Last week at the Defense Trade Show, two firms showed off their results of their joint venture. Metal Storm's weapons fired bullets electronically instead of with firing pins and primer, the ammunition stacked rather than mechanically reloaded. And the only moving parts in the weapon are the ammunition itself, which means the weapon can fire at a rate of thousands more rounds per minute, maybe even up to 1,000,000 theoretically. Metal Storm's 40mm weapons mount, the company tells us, can deliver both high explosive and less lethal rounds, which makes it perfect for everything from urban assaults to border patrol, infrastructure protection, how broad is that, to crowd control. So we have infrastructure protection and crowd control. Ordinarily, military bots have been used to look out for terrorists and their improvised bombs, but in the last year, the company's made a push into armed robotics, signing deals with the stun gun maker, there it is, Taser, and with the Metal Storm, its rival. Foster Miller has already tried out its machines with Metal Storm weapons and 3 machine gun toting bots in Iraq. Because of safety concerns, however, they're not seeing much action, not even crowd control. Now then, isn't that great? So we got massive purchase orders for autonomous vehicles. 6,000 of them. Okay? $6,000. All right? Now, I don't know about you, but I know that there's ways you can create scripts. We already have AIs in place. What if you just kind of put an AI on these robot nets that sort of work like one of these third person, video games like Warcraft or something like that, where you say, tanks, attack here. You know what I mean? Like, is that even possible? Is that feasible to have that? So you have one person controlling, say, I don't know, 200 of these things. Hell, that'd be a great game. You could make a game out of it, you know? And then you could use that to recruit. If you get, if you could get, like, thank you, Twick. If you could get a real-time strategy going in real life, why not? Then it really would be, it'd be an RLRTS. They'd be realtors, and who doesn't really like realtors? Now, this brings us, of course, to the brain controlling the 6,000 new taser-armed robots that they're going to use to keep track of those that they farm inside of the databases. Well, don't worry, in Skynet news, Arms Global Corp. Where do you guys get these names? Seriously? That's like right out of James Bond, man. Arms Global Corp, BAE Systems, has won the contract to develop a thinking battle computer to help human commanders directing U.S. forces in the wars of tomorrow. While the Deep Green Project is billed as more of a means of automating tiresome staff officers out of a job, that's a really funny way of saying it takes over running the army. Its name suggests otherwise. Deep Blue, as everyone knows, was the first computer to surpass the world's top-ranked human grandmaster in the mock combat of chess. It seems safe to say that Deep Green is intended not merely to assist human generals, but ultimately become far more adept than them in the art of battlefield command. Does anybody think that that's a good idea? At all? Unilaterally, that's a bad idea. For now, the Pentagon announced on Friday that BAE Systems National Security Solutions in Massachusetts was awarded the $5 million-plus contract last week for the development of the Battle Command Decision and Support System. In connection with the Deep Green program, people often think of the BAE as a British company, but in fact, nowadays, it has more U.S. employees than U.K. ones as its shift goes across the Atlantic. Given the nature of the project, the identity of the Pentagon funding body won't come as a surprise. It's DARPA! Of course, the Maverick Military Research Bureau, whose boffins collectively seem to paraphrase Sir Isaac Newton and say, if we are to see further than others, it will clearly mean standing on the shoulders of gigantic, tremendously powerful robotic dinosaurs able to shoot death rays out of their eyes. Yeah, on one hand, I kind of sit back and I go, well, that would suck, but as we head towards a ghost in the shell state, I wonder how can I adapt so that I can profit in a time that is upcoming. If we cannot defeat this, which I don't think we can, I think this is coming. If it's not going to come from America, it's going to come from China. So either way, okay, it's coming, it's emerging, okay? This is what's going to happen. Eventually, the singularity will hit. And we're going to lose control of the whole tech deal. So it's going to be about, not about who's right on this matter, but really it's going to be about who's left. I hate to say it, but that's what they're doing. The article goes on talking about all this different bullshit, considering, how they're going to have this Deep Green thing, be so great and wonderful. Yeah. Now, in to our defense, I guess, if we're going to be using it, if the Army decides to go against us, I got some e-warfare news. It's a minor miracle. Boeing is delivering the first of a new electronic attack airplanes to the Navy today. Didn't know if you knew about this. It's kind of neat. And not only is it the event occurring exactly according to the original schedule, the due line notes, Boeing's five-year-old development program is right on budget, too. Cue the choir and wake the pastor. The military development world, where projects routinely balloon in price and ship years after they're supposed to, this is the kind of basic competence that is bordering on the supernatural. It is an important project, too. The American military is almost out of these electronic attack planes. The aging 4-6 EA-6B Prowlers are now in the USA's sole remaining tactical aircraft, type for radar jamming, comms jamming, and information operations like signals and deception, Defense Industry Daily observes. They've been predictably busy as a result in Iraq, and they've been used for everything from escorting strike aircraft against heavily defended targets during the opening days of the war to disrupting enemy ID attacks by jamming all radio signals in an area. The new plane, the EA-18G Growler, takes the old aircraft's electronic warfare package and puts it in the body of a sleeker, faster fighter type FA-18EF Super Hornet. So I might say that it mitigates the on-time, on-budget miracle a bit. This is not the same as starting up a new weapon project from scratch, the D-Line says. So, we got fighter jets now that are, you know, kitted out. And although, yes, the F-18 is an older plane, it's still a pretty cool plane. I mean, you can't really go down there. Now, of course, we knew that this was going to come, and Comcast, I believe, is the ones who started it. No, I'm wrong. It's Time Warner. But yes, in server slavery news, you're used to paying extra for your cell phone minutes, but were you willing to pay extra for your home computer goes over its internet allowance? Time Warner Cable Incorporated customers and later others may have to if the company's test of the metered internet access is successful. On Thursday, a new Time Warner Cable internet subscribers in Beaumont, Texas, will have a monthly allowances for amount of data they upload or download. Those who go over will be charged $1 per gig, a Time Warner Cable executive told the Associated Press. Metered billing is an attempt to deal fairly with the internet usage, which is uneven between Time Warner's cable subscribers, said Kevin Libby, Time Warner Cable's executive vice president of advanced technology. So, wow. Just 5% of the company's subscribers take up half the capacity on local cable lines, Letty said. Other cable internet service providers report a similar distribution. So we're going to start to see this happen more and more and more, it seems. We're going to start seeing a lot more of this kind of behavior going on in the world. And is that a good thing? I would say no. Anything that limits your access to technology is a bad thing. Almost unilaterally, I would say that's a bad thing. And eventually, once they're doing that, then they'll have licensing and they'll have net nanny done on the router level, and pretty soon, you know, it's going to be just like they say. You know, we're going to need to form our own grid, and that's why communities like the Rant Media community and why we do what we've been doing for the last 10 years. Because don't say we didn't warn you, okay? We know it's coming. We're doing all we can. I would stand out on the street with a sign on, but instead I'm going to stand on the side of the information highway, and it seems that there's an awful lot of highwaymen joining me along the way. Now, you remember, oh boy, we're going to go back probably about 2 years ago or so. I did a story about a guy who invented a paint called Super Black, which absorbed more light than regular black. So it looked almost like you were looking, it was a paint that looked like velvet. But check this out, we have a Super Black update. A team of scientists from Boston College and Duke University has developed a highly engineered metamaterial capable of absorbing all of the light that strikes it to a scientific standard of perfection. They reported in the latest edition of Physical Review Letters. The team designed and engineered a metamaterial that uses tiny geometric surface features to successfully capture the electric and magnetic properties of a microwave to the point of total absorption. Three things can happen to light when it hits this material, said Boston College physicist Willie Padilla. It can be reflected as in a mirror, it can be transmitted out with a window of glass, or it can be absorbed and turned into heat. The metamaterial has been engineered to ensure that all light is neither reflected nor transmitted, but is turned completely into heat and absorbed. It shows that we can design a metamaterial so that at specific frequency, it can absorb all the photons that fall upon its surface. Holy crap! In addition to Paladelia, the team included the BC researcher Nathan I. Landy, Duke University professor David R. Smith, and researchers Soji Sajuibi and Jack Mock. The group used computer simulations based on prior research findings in the field to design resonators able to couple individually to electric and magnetic fields to successfully absorb all incident radiation, according to their findings. So this is pretty wild. I mean, to have a material like that that can absorb all like that strikes it. Now, wouldn't that be kind of stealthy? Like things that require lasers, like you hit it with a laser, the laser bounces back, right? And then you can track it, right? Because the laser has to send back data. But if you have a material that absorbs all light, then it's going to be pretty hard to laser track, isn't it? Because the laser's not bouncing back. And if it's got a scientific absorption rate of perfection, that means that, you know, the whole laser tracking thing just is not going to work. You're not going to be able to laser that target. Anything that relies on a laser to gather data is hereby rendered inoperative. Isn't that neat? So excuse me while I get me an overcoat made out of that stuff, because that sounds pretty slick. Thank you very much. Now, in biomod news, and this was sent to me by Truso the Ronin Alien Kitten. Very cool story. In every town, in every part of this sprawling country, you can find the faceless sprawling strip mall in which to do shopping. Rarely, though, would you expect to find a medical miracle working behind the counter of the mall's hobby shop. However, that is what Lee Spivak considers himself to be. I put my finger in, Spivak says, pointing towards the propellers of a model airplane, and that's when I sliced my finger off. It took the end right off, right down to the bone, about a half an inch. We don't know where the piece went. The photos of his severed fingertip are pretty graphic. You can understand why doctors said he'd lost it for good. Today, you wouldn't know it. Mr. Spivak, who is 69, shows off his finger and it's all there. Tissue, nerves, nails, skin, even his fingerprint. How? Well, that's the truly remarkable part. It wasn't a transplant. Mr. Spivak regrew his fingertip. He used a powder, or pixie dust, as he sometimes referred to us while telling his story. Mr. Spivak's brother, Alan, was working in the field of regenerative medicine, sent him the powder. For 10 days, Mr. Spivak put a little bit on his finger. The second time I put it on, I could already see growth. Every day it was up further, and finally it closed up, and it was a finger. It's about 4 weeks before it was sealed. Now he says he has a complete feeling and complete movement. And your brother's probably losing his job. The pixie dust comes from the University of Pittsburgh through the lab of Dr. Stephen Badylak. He prefers to call it extracellular matrix. The process has been pioneered over the last few years and involves scraping the cells from the lining of the pig's bladder. How it works in detail, the remaining tissue is then placed into an acid, cleaned of all its cells, dried out, turned into sheets or powder. It looks like a simple process, but the science is complex. There are all sorts of signals in the body, explained Dr. Bladek. We have got those signals. We got signals that are good for forming scar, and others that are used for different things. One way to think about these matrices, if we've taken out many of the stimuli for scar tissue formation and left those signals that were always there for constructive remodeling. In other words, when the cellular matrix is put on a wound, scientists believe it stimulates cells in the tissue to grow rather than scar. If they can perfect the technique, it might one day they could repair not just a severed finger, but severely burnt skin, even damaged organs. They hope soon to start a clinical trial in Buenos Aires on a woman who has cancer of the esophagus. Well, what about your brother who just regrew a finger? The normal procedure in such cases is often deadly. Doctors remove the cancerous portion and try to stretch the stomach lining to meet the shortened esophagus. In the trial, they will place an extracellular matrix inside the body where the portion of the esophagus has been removed in hopes to stimulate the cells around it to regrow in the missing portion. So could limbs be regrown? Dr. Badylak is cautious, but believes the technology is potentially revolutionary. So, yeah. I wish I could be one of these doctor's friends. I mean, that'd be cool, right? I mean, who wouldn't want to do that? You know, I like to have some of this powder kicking around, some pixie dust, you know, as they say. Now, I had to have a sip of scotch there for this next story. Because of all the stories that I have ever thought I would come across and I would ever have to report. This one, to me, is one of the most disturbing, I think, of all time. This particular story was sent to me by, I think it's Agathist. It's like atheist, but it's Agathist. And I don't remember getting an email from this guy before. I guess he's a dude who came across this and just realized that, you know, holy crap, you know, if anybody's going to want to see this, it's going to want to be Sean. Well, I didn't want to see this story. Let me see if I can get this out there, okay? In brain chip news, it is a new frontier for psychiatric illness. Brain pacemakers that promise to act as antidepressants by changing how patients' nerve circuitry fires. Scientists already know the power of these devices to block the tremors of Parkinson's disease and related illness. More than 40,000 such patients worldwide have implants. But psychiatric illnesses are much more complex, and the new experiments with so-called deep brain stimulus, or DBS, are in their infancy. In their infancy. Only a few dozen patients with severe depression or obsessive compulsive disorder have so far been treated in closely monitored studies. Still, the early results are promising. Dramatic videos show one patient visibly brightening as a doctor turns up her pacemaker and she says in surprise, "I'm starting to smile." And the new reports this month show that some worst-case patients whose depression wasn't relieved by medication, psychotherapy, or even controversial shock treatment are finding lasting relief. 6 of 17 severely depressed patients were in remission after a year of undergoing DBS, and 4 more markedly improved. More than 26 obsessive-compulsive patients showed substantial improvement over 3 years, say studies from a team of Cleveland Clinic, Brown University, and Belgium's University of Leuven. Not all patients get better, but when patients respond, it's significant, says Dr. Helen Mayberg of Emory University, who has implanted about 50 depression patients. Her first remains in remission after 5 years. She estimates that four of every 6 show enough improvement to be classified as responders. We're rewiring the brain in many ways, says Dr. Ali Rizzi, chief of the Cleveland Center's Center for Neurological Restoration. There is a need for innovative therapies. Up to 20% of depressive patients and 10% of those with obsessive-compulsive disorder are treatment-resistant, several million in the U.S. alone. The rationale behind DBS is credible, said Dr. Wayne Goodman of the National Institute for Mental Health. Surgery sometimes helps the worst-case patients by destroying misfiring patches of brain tissue. The electrodes are placed into similar spots, but don't destroy the tissue. The electrical signals can be adjusted and turned off. But it's not really ready for prime time, Goodman cautions. He worries that the electrodes already are widely available. He worries because the electrodes already are widely available. Centers without proper training will start offering the $40,000 implant surgeries to psychiatric patients before science proves if they're really valuable. So they're already out there. They're already installing them, and the doctor who's doing the research is saying, yeah, they're just going to start installing them. Earlier this month, federal health officials in the Cleveland Clinic brought together the field's leading researchers to highlight progress so far and debate if it's time for much larger studies, even whether DBS might be tweaked to help people with traumatic brain injuries, such as Iraq war veterans. Okay, so I gotta get through this story. There's not enough awareness of what the potential of this kind of stimulation, says meeting co-chair Dr. Margaret Gianni, who heads the government's office on disability. In deep brain stimulation of Parkinson's, wire is implanted within the walnut-sized area known as the thalamus, the hub of sensory information. The electrode is connected by a cable running through the neck to a pulse generator under the collarbone. Tiny little electrical zaps disable overreactive nerve cells and blocking tremors. Scientists don't have nearly as much understanding of what goes awry to cause depression or other psychiatric illnesses, but they do know the thalamus isn't the right spot for the patients. They're focusing instead on 2 regions with names only a neurologist could love, the ventral capsule ventral stadium, or the so-called Brodmann area 25. Ignore the names. The point is that these are regions where brain circuitry is involved in mood and anxiety intersect. It is not clear who should have DBS and in which spot, or if there are still other target areas. Much of the research data has been funded by electrode manufacturers with some paid for by the government, and consists of measuring patients' disability before and after DBS, not more rigorous studies than a random assign, not more rigorous studies than randomly assigned patients to treatment. Still, Diane Heyer of Cleveland, the patient whose first smile was recorded, illustrates hope. The 12-year Navy veteran was medically discharged for depression and spent a decade on disability, unable to function. "I basically felt like a dead person walking. I had no feelings, no emotions," she told scientists in a meeting. Her DBS was switched on in January of 2007. "My whole world changed," says Heyer. She's 54. She's not back at work yet. "It's a real challenge to learn how to live as a healthy person again," she adds, saying it doesn't handle... She doesn't handle stress or multitasking well, but I wake up every day looking forward to what's ahead. And that's the story. When the setup for that story is that they're going to start offering these desert vets as they come home. They're going to start offering them to do these chipping, and if you don't take it, then you're denying treatment, and then they're off the hook for setting you up. But if they can just install a chip, you know, that pretty much overrides everything, what are they going to do with that? And, you know, I used to look at the guys who would say, "They microchip my head," and think that those guys were, you know, totally insane. That would never happen. There'd be no case where they would do that, let alone for psychiatric behavior, let alone for the weird and wacky, wonderful world of psychiatric illness, which they can't even really define. Okay, they can't even define what is a mental illness and what is not a mental illness. It's based largely upon, I mean, you get the right signatures and you're done. So this is why, now more than ever, it's important to understand your covert abilities as well as overt abilities, because it's only a matter of time now before, you know, somebody logs your DNA. And if you're doing the wrong things or you're the wrong genetic disposition, maybe your grandfather was a rebel, and you're going to be called in for profiling. Or maybe you'll just get chipped out of... maybe they'll start just chipping convicts. What if we could do digital rehabilitation? Wouldn't that be cheaper? Wouldn't that be cheaper? Your daily hack today is the mind machine. Or how I use a flashing bicycle light to take a nap and make it more refreshing. It's a complete breakdown of how to basically build one of those flashing light type systems. Very, very cool. As well... a site which I imagine, well, probably sites like this won't be around too much longer. I found this one when I was poking around. It's called Codename Insight. It's an awesome resource site. The site for adventurers, travelers, mercenaries, fed types, pseudo-fed types, survivalists, military techies, and researchers. He didn't say WOGs there, but let me tell you, they're up there. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive, now more than ever. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the WOGs Who Care. If you cannot donate to this show, please distribute it. Don't spam people with it, but distribute it to people you think might like it. But if you can donate, please do so by clicking on the Donate tab at the Dark Atlas website, or send a clever envelope to Rant Media Studios, Box 18121, 1215C, 56th Street, Delta, BC, Canada, V4M2M4. And I want to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys for assistance in gathering data. If you have information that you would like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-E-L, at randradio.com. If you like the music in the background, you should check out Psytrance, because pretty soon, it's probably going to be illegal. So remember, everyone, we'll never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, hey, that's what server said. End of line.
Again, motherfucker, yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on down and see the idiot right here. Too fucked to beg and not afraid to care. What's the matter with calamity anyway? Right, get the fuck out of my face. Understand I can't feel anything. It isn't like I want to sift through the decay. I feel like a wound, like I got a fucking gun against my head. You live when I'm dead. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. Come on. Now, so fuck it. Blood on my face and my hands, I don't know why. I'm not afraid to cry, but that is none of your business. Overdo it, don't tell me you blew it. Stop your bitching and fight your way through it. I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to die. People equal shit.